Hey everybody, welcome to My Opinion Movies. This week we start a month based around my personal choices, which makes them my favorite month already. Now, that being said, we have a whole bunch of fun classic movies that I kind of love and I'm looking forward to talking about. But we're starting with a Star Trek movie, one that, frankly, the more I watch it, the more it becomes one of my favorites. Maybe it's because I read Making It So, the Patrick Stewart autobiography, and very closely followed by Shatner book, The Rules to Being Shatner, or something like that. Anyway, that being said, I think it's great, and I get emotional at points, and there's good acting, and besides, it's Star Trek fun with Kirk and Picard in the same movie, so enjoy. Thanks for doing all you do to keep us on the charts, and thanks for listening. Bye, everyone.
Welcome to Myopia Movies. We are still in my month, my Nick month. Although this week, I guess we're staying with the Christmas theme as we visit Charles Dickens.
This is a Christmas movie.
As we deal with Charles Dickens' Christmas. I'm your host, Nick Hoffman, Riff Ron, Center Provenal panel. We've got...
Kieko.
And...
Hello, this is Daniel, and I really don't have any Star Trek jokes I can make.
Yeah, man. We are doing Star Trek Generations, the one that kind of bridges the gap between the first six, which are the TOS, the original series movies, and the four, I guess, including this one, five TNG movies.
There was Nemesis, First Contact, this one.
And Insurrection, which is completely forgettable.
Okay. I forgot it even existed. There you go.
The other ones are just not very good, unfortunately. We have no... And then the last one, Nemesis, the one we've done, I believe, and it's a Tom Hardy movie.
It was.
Is the last one until Star Trek 2009, previous episode. We were trying to figure this out before we started.
There has now been as much between the last Star Trek movie and now between, what was it, Nemesis and the remake?
Yes. It's a shame because those the I guess, J.J. Abrams trilogy is pretty good.
I turned the third one off after like 10 minutes, and the first one was pretty decent. The second one was kind of mad to me.
Benedict Cumberbatch's one?
Mm.
And then the third one is the one with Idris Elba as the big bad.
I didn't get to that part.
So we were talking before we started. We've done, at this point, Star Trek Wrath of Khan twice now. We've done Star Trek IV, the one with the whales. We've done Star Trek VI, the...
That's this one, isn't it?
No. Star Trek VI is the Unforgotten Country.
The Undiscovered Country. Okay.
And then we've done, now this one, Star Trek VII. And we've done Star Trek First Contact. And we've done Star Trek 2009. So we're doing pretty good.
Now... Full disclosure, and I know I've said this on previous episodes, I'm not really much of a Trekkie. I mean, I know I've seen it. I know basically who the characters are in the original and here. If you put a gun to my head and ask me to talk about what happened in a specific episode, I can't do it. Keiko, I understand you're more of a...
Yeah,
fan.
So we actually have watched all of the original series, all of Voyager, all of Enterprise, all of Deep Space Nine, all of Next Generation. We haven't watched any of the new ones because we haven't bought the subscription service to watch them.
Damn you, Paramount. Because
we already have a few.
Sure.
I would love to. I love Star Trek. I consider myself more of a Star Trek fan than Star Wars. I like Star Wars too, but I prefer Star Trek.
One of my show, and my wife doesn't like walk out of the room when I watch it. She just doesn't care. But I really like Lower Decks, which is one of the new...
I haven't watched it.
Yeah.
I also saw that I don't know if I'm allowed to...
Do whatever.
I don't know. So Netflix is going to be getting the kids' Star Trek show.
I saw that.
Prodigy.
Yes.
And it actually, they may actually have it now already. I think it may have been December 1st. But I want to show that to the kids. So,
yeah, I mean, so I was introduced to Star Trek in college. I'm sure I've told the story, but, you know, who's even listening? Hi. Hello, our two fans. Hello, Bandcamp, who just reached out to us.
One of them is me.
That's right.
And the other one is me.
But, you know.
Well, there's that member of the Nigerian royal family who keeps contacting us.
And he just wants to give us money.
Yeah.
He just wants to give us money.
We had to reopen the Patreon just for him.
That's right. But, like, you know, my buddy Kyle, now professor of computer science, Dr. Kaufman, Professor Kaufman, got me into it. And, you know, he was telling me about these, you know, just the basics. Like, it's supposed to be about morality and whether or not morality still works in a galaxy far, far away. Right. It's it's our core values and then testing them in novel situations. And in it, we have our two great early Star Trek leaders. And again, I know if Candace was here, she would be talking about Captain Janeway, her favorite, Candace Laslowski, friend of the show. And, you know,
do you remember that Mystery Science Theater 3000 sketch with Mike as Captain Janeway?
Yes. All-timer. All-timer.
Oh, yeah. Stow it, you two. Even thinking about it makes me laugh.
But we have James T. Kirk, who was the study nerd guy in college at the Academy and now is your playboy across the galaxy. And we have Picard, who got into so many bar fights he has a robot heart because he gets stabbed in the heart and now he's a nerd. And the two of them have to beat up Alex from A Clockwork Orange.
Yes. That's pretty much the plot. And somehow Kirk shows up in some sort of ranch home.
I do have to say, like, watching, you know, you said it's like morality, exploring, you know, what it means to be human. I really enjoyed, like, when we first started watching the original series, the first episode, there's these, like, weird flying, like, manta rays or jellyfish or something, and you think it's just going to be stupid, right? You're just like, oh, this is going to be hard to watch. But actually, the original series was still relevant. It still talked about the same freaking stuff that we're talking about today, like back then. So I think that's really cool.
And I mean, there are some all-time, like, but I had a theory at one point, and one day we'll test it, but, like, you could almost boil down every TV show that matters ever into one episode. Star Trek has a few of them. The original series has a few of them. Like, there's one, I forget the character's name, I apologize, but it's Her Must Die. They go back in time, they try to save a woman's life, and it ends up having these incredible consequences for the future. Mm. It's a tried and true tradition of Star Trek meets the Nazis. Which happens in almost every series a whole bunch, including that unwatchable Enterprise show where there's a whole bunch of Nazi stuff.
See, at least Doctor Who cut to the point and transported him back to the London Blitz.
Well, I will say, yes, but they're still British, so one of their big bads is always the Nazis, which are the Daleks. Mm-hmm. And the Daleks never get any better, and they never go away.
Oh, could you imagine if Captain Kirk met the Daleks?
My God, people who will listen.
Man who makes bad records, so, trying to command starship. Explain, explain.
I'm sure. Just randomly, though, I'm surprised that Davies hasn't gotten a Doctor Who movie, like a full fledged in theater. Like,
I mean, they had the 50th anniversary in theaters, but I don't think it would really work as a movie.
I want to watch Doctor Who, but I have been so overwhelmed with, like, where to begin. Like, where do you start?
You can start in the 2005 one.
With what's his name?
With Christopher Eccleston. Yeah. You can start there.
Oh, not David Tennant?
That's like the year right
that's
before Tennant.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah.
And so I would start with him if only the companion carries over, which helps. But also, the Eccleston stuff reestablishes a bunch of the important characters.
Yeah.
Right? You get the Daleks, you get Cybermen, you get those things. And the first season, there's a reason why some people who are very kind of hardcore sci-fi, like nuts and bolts sci-fi, like Eccleston the most, because it is kind of the most basic. They don't rely on a lot of pathos. Mm-hmm. It's very like, he's PTSD heavy, he hates all the villains he sees.
It's and mostly so on kind of, Earth too, so.
Yeah, it's very unhinged.
Earth 2, now that's a good show.
Earth, 2.
We're not in the DCU or anything.
Well, I feel proud that I somehow turned this into a Doctor Who conversation as opposed to a Star Trek. Now, I also bring that up because it's a perfect template for what Star Trek did. It was popular in the 60s. It had a big influence, but by the time the 80s rolled around for Star Trek and the 2000s rolled around for Doctor Who, both of them were very old hat, and so the revivals turned out to be very successful, even though nobody believed that they would be.
Right.
And I just keep thinking of the template that Star Trek set for that. And mm-hmm. I also think even though Star Trek set the template, Doctor Who did it better in reviving the series.
I think the difference, there's a lot of differences, but I don't think you're necessarily wrong. It's just, it's a very different kind of show.
Yeah, I couldn't say because I haven't watched Doctor Who.
You're also more of a Doctor Who fan.
Yeah. Yes, I am.
And part of the difference, too, is just how BBC does shows versus how CBS does, because even Star Trek TOS, there's 75 episodes or something in 3 seasons, and that was the show that failed.
Yeah.
Right? And that's something we, don't really think of, but, TOS barely made it. After the pilot, they had to rejigger the whole thing, only kept one actor, everyone else was fired, and it was only because Lucille Ball kind of liked it.
Yeah.
And then it only made 1.5 seasons before it was canceled again. Then they finished that second season. And then it went to another network and had no budget. Star Trek only catches on, truly, because of syndication.
Yeah.
And then that's why that first movie takes so long to come out. The show is canceled in, 66 or something. And then the first movie doesn't come out until after Star Wars. It's 78.
Mm-hmm.
There was an animated show at one point, wasn't there?
Which had the same voice cast. And it's very cheap. But it's not bad. A few episodes are pretty good. Although I will say my favorite story about that first movie, which one day we might do, is they were trying to get a Batman movie off the ground because Superman had come out. And the original Superman movie is a masterpiece. It's a lot of fun. The John Williams score, Dick Donner on it. And so They're like, the next logical step will be a Batman movie. Let's do a Batman movie. And what's the guy's name who played Batman? Adam West.
Adam West.
Adam West was convinced they would hire him back. And the example he gave was, they let Kirk come back to do Star Trek. Because whatever it was, 13 years later, pudgy Kirk and his girl came out. And he's like, I think I could be Batman still. And then it took another 11 years before they settled on Michael Keaton in that movie, which is a masterpiece, one of my favorites of all time. But just imagine that. We could have had Adam West fighting Jack Nicholson.
I would have loved to see the crossover of Adam West Batman with Captain Kirk, quite honestly.
I'm sure there's a graphic novel somewhere in IDW.
Speaking of girdles, the girdle that Shatner has on this one, and it just shows how aging affects us all, it's pushed to the limit.
Kirk is having a hell of a good time. Shatner is loving every minute of this.
Well, he got rid of all the people he hated in the original cast. They didn't show up to this one.
Yeah, well, I actually looked that up about George Takei because I was like, why is he not in it? Because they had bad blood, apparently.
I think they still do.
They absolutely still do. And I it's one of those things, you know how there's that old thing where a married couple who's been married for 60 years when they die, mm-hmm. right? The husband dies, the wife dies a month later because they've been. It's going to be the same thing with Takei and Shatner.
But just out of hatred, a hatred bond?
It's the other way around. It's because Takei wants to outlive Shatner, and even if it's by 12 hours, he's going to outlive that fat Canadian. I'm positive about this.
Well, I mean, at this point, Nimoy hated Shatner too, right? Or had they patched things up?
Well, I think they had an understanding because, there was always that ego trip thing going, right? And then Shatner invited Nimoy on to direct some TJ Hooker episodes, and then he started directing movies, and then there was an understanding. I don't think they were, I think that was more collegial.
It was like a Mick Jagger, Keith Richards situation. I hate you, but I make a lot of money by working with you, so I'm going to keep doing that.
We'll get along.
Yeah.
It was quite nostalgic though. I was a little sad that I wasn't fresh off of either of the series.
Yeah.
Starting to watch it. And because you could tell there was this nostalgia, bringing Shatner and then putting Picard there, and you know, so
you know what this kind of reminded me of, and it goes back to Doctor Who, right before the 50th anniversary. Yeah, I should put on thick glasses, I know, or carry out a wheelbarrow full of tacos, a la the comic book guy. Right before the 50th anniversary, there was this one doctor, the 8th, who had only been in like one movie.
Yeah.
And then he did a bunch of audio stories, but never it appeared again, and he never got a regeneration scene. So before the 50th anniversary, they brought him back for like a 6-minute short, just so he could have a canonical death. And this Shatner's appearance here kind of reminded me of that, and that they just wanted to send off Kirk, and Shatner was demanding some sort of heroic death.
Well, I mean, like the whole thing, there's a story. There's an episode of TOS where he flashes to his future and he sees how he's being mourned because like he's kind of like the biggest celebrity in the universe, which they play off of, right? Mm-hmm. But he's supposed to die on the bridge, and everyone assumes that it's the bridge of the ship, but here he just dies on a bridge. which is just kind of like
by himself, fuck you, old man. Unnecessarily too, I'd say. It is
well apparently it's better than the original ending, which we'll get to if you remind me.
Okay. Yeah, that was real kind of goofy though.
Oh, it was. This was a reshoot, and you can tell because Shatner's girdle doesn't fit as well, but we'll get there.
It's happening to us right now, Nick. It's going to happen to everyone.
It happens to us all. Girdles fit us all. So let's start with the beginning. So the beginning of this is Shatner's, they dust him off because they're inaugurating a new enterprise.
With a champagne bottle, and that's what we're following in the opening credits, and that's that bad CGI vintage 2265 wine.
You know, it's funny. It is very CGI. I told my wife when we were watching it, it reminds me of what would be like a computer test. Like you're like, let's look at what the new graphics card can do. And it's just like this bottle flying through space. It's Dom Perignon from the 23rd century. But the whole thing is that this is supposed to be a PR move, right? Yeah. We have the press coming on board, and you get Kirk, you get Scotty, and you get Chekhov coming on the board of the ship to inaugurate this new starship, okay, the Enterprise B. And
did you notice, by the way, talking about the credits, who did the story to this movie?
Go ahead. Yes, I did.
It was Ronald Moore, the guy who recreated Battlestar Galactica. So like that news series, that was him.
Yeah, and it smells Battlestar Galactica, and not a bad way. It just
I kind of wish it smelled more of Battlestar Galactica and Beats.
And if you watch, Ronald D. Moore actually writes a bunch of Star Trek.
Oh, he does?
Yeah, he started on TNG, in fact.
Oh.
And this is kind of where he cut his teeth in sci-fi, where he pitched the show from. I'll also mention here, the captain of the Enterprise B is Alan Ruck, Ferris Bueller's buddy.
Also in Speed and Twister.
Captain Harriman, who I love because, you know, he's fired after this. Like, I don't know if you can be fired, but like, you had one job. To take the most famous man in the universe out past Pluto and come back, and he's dead within half an hour, you're fired. Like, even if it's not your fault, you're gone.
One of the other things, which I guess reinforced that George Takei really, 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 really didn't want to be around William Shatner as the new helmsman, is Sulu's daughter.
Yeah.
Sulu's daughter.
So they didn't bring Sulu back, but I guess they wanted that connection.
Well, and also, very clearly here, one of my favorite parts of this beginning sequence, just very basically, he's supposed to go out, the press, which are just wearing Google glasses, which is really funny to me, are like right in his face. And so he says, you know, take her out, like all this stuff, so that the press can get the sound bites in. They're going out past Jupiter or whatever they're supposed to be, and they get this distress call. And what's happening are these two Allurian ships are being destroyed by a ribbon in space. We'll get to know that as the Nexus. But what happens in the interim is...
it's a tear in the space-time continuum, Marty!
Morty. Morty. This is the Rick Morty, and Morty yes. plot. But the thing is...
I almost said Morty, too. Jesus.
The thing about this, somehow they're the only spaceship within walking distance of Earth. Right? Like, it's strange. Like, they're always the only ship in the area, but this time they're right outside of Earth's atmosphere, so you'd think there'd be literally anyone else. But we have this joke that it's kind of not even a full ship yet. Like, the transporters don't work. There's no one on board. There's no medical staff.
There's no weapons.
Until Tuesday. It's always until Tuesday. And Shatner even gets the line, let me guess, Tuesday? Like, it's so... Anyway, I find that funny. Like, they're letting Shatner act, and Shatner's having a blast, and I'm kind of with him here. However, when the shit goes tits up, you have Chekhov asking for people to be nurses and Scotty giving commands, because apparently originally it was supposed to be Dr. McCoy and Spock. Mm-hmm. And Spock, apparently Nimoy was supposed to originally direct this, and then they changed stuff around. And then Nimoy said, I'm not going to do this because my lines could be said by anyone. Case in point, they bring up James Doohan to be Scotty, and it doesn't matter. Although it is really funny when, like, Chekhov, who's this big, is issuing orders to make people nurses, as though he knows anything about medicine, which is fantastic. But that was supposed to be McCoy, but at this point, DeForest Kelly was incredibly sick.
Yeah.
And I think he died the same year.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What happened to him? Like,
oh, I mean, the guy was in his 90s. Like,
DeForest Kelly?
Yeah, DeForest Kelly before was the oldest guy on the original Star Trek by far, but he was doing, like, westerns in the 40s, and, like... Mm. And so by the time this was going around, he was in his, like, late 80s, early 90s.
The wiki said he passed away in 1999 at the age of 79. So he was
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's longer than I thought.
Well, he was still 70, would have been 75 then when they were releasing this movie. So.
Yeah, so he was too sick to act. I don't know what was going on. But regardless, as the first DeLorean ship blows up, Harriman doesn't know what to do. And so... Kirk says, look, just get close enough for us to beam people off, and then we'll get the hell out of there when we can, right? And we have, like, an old school Star Trek episode for about 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
The first ship destroyed. There's 150 people on the other transport ship. They're transporting people off as quickly as possible. They only get 47. And Scotty's like, I only got 47.
One of whom I believe is Whoopi.
One of which is Guinan, Whoopi Goldberg.
See, I didn't know she was a Trek thing. I thought maybe she had guest starred in an episode at one point, but apparently I'm wrong.
No, and I can't recall, like, what she is, because she's something, she's some other, like, kind of special, like galaxy being. Like, she's
an alien. She's not
some
human.
Kind of, well, I mean, they're all aliens, right?
Well, like, not
everybody's
Picard,
alien.
Though,
but yeah, but she's like a
she's not a Terran. She is what? She's not a Lurian either. She's whatever Sauron is too.
Is she the same thing as him?
Yeah, that's why they're both like 500 years old or whatever.
Sauron. She's a giant eye that lives in Mordor. Mordor.
Have you seen them eyes, girl? Like, she's got some incredible eyes. Also, just because there are Trekkies who do watch this, there's a guy in this movie who's just called Lieutenant. His name is Tim Russ. And later he's going to come on in, Voyager as Tuvok. He's also in Spaceballs. He's the guy in the desert with the Afro pick going, we ain't found shit. Same guy.
That's one of my favorite episodes. I have two episodes that I just think of that have really stuck with me, and I don't retain a lot of things. But it's Tuvok's. Mm-hmm. The one where Tuvok and Neelix
merge together.
Is one of my all-time favorites. And the other one is when Picard has his life, like when he...
Oh, right. Where he goes to that planet and ends up getting old.
Yeah.
Dude, that's a heartbreaker.
Yeah.
There's some really good episodes of that show. That's one I hadn't seen before, I think, during COVID, like 2020, 2021 or something like that.
Yeah.
My wife and I just, like, got a list off of whatever, Nerdist. And we watched all, like, the best 20 because I had seen most of that show. That was one at the end where, like, her and I just sat in silence.
Yeah, yeah. We would watch them before bed, right? And after that one, we were just, like crying and...
Now,
yeah, that's good.
There's this one moment from TNG that I'm not even sure exists because I remember seeing it on TV, like, when it was in syndication as a kid. And it was some, like, parody or reference to Alien where this guy explodes and then this creature starts crawling out from, like... his bottom half is gone. It starts, well, excuse me, his top half and then bottom half, and then Picard shoots it with a phaser. Did that happen?
I mean, it does.
I don't remember.
Yes. Did it? That is the thing that happens.
Okay.
I mean,
that was very graphic from what I remember, too.
There,
you could, like, see a spine.
Star Trek is one of those shows that every so often push the boundaries. And I remember that one. They had a couple horror episodes, which were weird because this was like a Thursday night show. Like, it's just a primetime show kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I had a I already talked about Kyle, but my buddy, friend of the show, Mark. Him and I used to watch them when we lived together, a lot of Star Trek.
Mm.
And like, dude, there were some weird ass episodes.
Yeah. There's
the one where Troy gets pregnant from a ghost, which we can ignore. And one and one where like, what's her name? Crusher has sex with something. It's very strange. Right? You know what I'm talking about? She also directed that episode. It's very strange.
Is it like a symbiote kind of thing?
Yes, it is. Yeah, it's absolutely a symbiote.
There's also one when Captain Janeway and the pilot guy, they get turned into lizards.
Dude.
Like giant lizard, swamp lizards.
And they go to Pound Town. Yeah. They do.
They do.
Maybe I need to check the show out after all.
Once every season or so, Dana tells us that he's fully functional as well.
Yeah,
He does. He hooks up with the Borg Queen pretty hard, too.
Did either of you guys ever watch The Orville?
I watched a bit of it.
I'm aware it exists.
I watched a bit of it. I just, it loses my interest because it's, what, 6 years old at this point? There's like 40 episodes. They'll do like five at a time and then it will go off the air.
Yeah.
It's finally been canceled forever. It's just...
I don't know that it's actually officially been canceled, but it's been not renewed for long enough that I think it probably is.
It's just
they'll probably do a reunion. Well,
so here's what's
weird
about The Orville. So they had three seasons of this format that's like silly Star Trek. Mm-hmm. Like basically, you know, who's the guy, the Family Guy guy?
Seth MacFarlane.
He was a huge fan. He has been in Star Trek episodes. Like he loves Star Trek.
Yeah.
He hosted the Oscars. He had William Shatner show up as Captain Kirk during his monologue.
Yeah. So it's like silly Star Trek. And then the last episode, when it was sold, like Hulu bought it, it was like the show that I think he originally intended, which was much more like Star Trek, less silly, more story depth. I think the episodes are longer. Like it's like basically just Star Trek. I really like The Orville.
I mean, what I remember was whenever they were talking about it first 8 years ago, maybe.
Right, right.
It was more like he was asked to do a Star Trek show, and then it got cut, and then Fox or whoever bought it out and made The Orville instead.
I don't know.
The thing that just bothers me now about it, just period, we haven't had, like you said, a JJ one in like 12 years.
Mm.
All these people have talked about they want to do a Star Trek.
Is there one in the works? Is there one?
At the moment, no. There's nothing. Because what's his name? Leonard Nimoy died the same day, the same year that, what's his name? The guy who was playing Chekhov.
Oh, I know who you're talking about.
And then they just, the fourth one that they were working on just went into limbo. But like Tarantino has talked about wanting to do one. McFarlane has talked about doing one. Like all these people who would get people into seats. And yet we don't have anything. And
yeah.
That Picard show went from being meh to worse to interesting, kind of, but no one cares anymore. Discovery has already been canceled, though it's four seasons, so at least there's something. Put it on the big screen. Let's see what you can do. It's a shame.
Well, I mean, Star Trek on the big screen has been very inconsistent, which, hey, speaking of this movie.
But, okay, right. But at least the JJ movies made money.
Yes, they
did. Right now, nothing is making money. Disney's going to lose $1.5 billion this year or something from movies. So we'll get there. Just very quickly, the ribbon, which we will learn is the Nexus, as they're pulling away from, they don't have the photon torpedoes. So Kirk foists himself into this weird galley. He's pulling out these cards.
Speaking of when they're supposed to come, I will gladly give you Photon Torpedoes Tuesday for a hamburger today.
Well done, Daniel. You got there. No. And what they're trying to use is the deflector dish to send out some weird bolt thing. It's Star Trek nonsense. We just nod and say, like, Geordi's probably right, right? Scotty is probably right.
Space science words.
If anyone's heard the Voltaire Star Trek song, which is awesome because the man is awesome, it's pretty much the same thing. That's the way we do things, lad. We're making shit up as we wish.
That's right. Why not? It's Star Trek science. But he essentially switches out the cards. It works. They start to pull away. And the Nexus flashes this kind of tendril of lightning, shooting the ship. And all of this, like, the hull is pulled away. And we're told by Sulu's daughter that it's destroyed the, you know, the aft component, yada, yada. The hull is destroyed on decks 13, 14, and 15.
Where Kirk was.
Guess exactly. Who's on
and Scotty
15.
Is starts issuing commands. He goes, you know, bridge to Captain Kirk, bridge to Kirk. He's not getting anything. And he goes, gets Chekov down here with me. Him and Harriman go down. And I'm only emphasizing this because I think the acting here is really effective.
Now, that's the thing. The first bit of this movie with those three, especially with Shatner, I actually was enjoying it.
You were completely engaged, right?
Yes.
Because they show up. And, you know, Harriman is seeing his pension turn to dust. And Scotty is staring into the void. And Chekov goes, holy shit, what is happening? And he goes, was anyone here? And all Scotty says is, I... And you just... That's good! And then the camera does this thing, which, again, this is 94. The CGI is pretty rudimentary. It looks remarkable. They pan out of the ship, and we see the whole... torn away, and again, Harriman is just fired. Like, he might as well just jump into the void himself. And then we cut to TNG playing some grab ass. This is like the most, like, if you do not know TNG, this is nonsense.
They're on a pirate ship, and they're dressed as pirates, and they have Worf captured.
And Worf is being promoted, and they're like, so you know what you need to do? You need to tell us all the great things. And Jonathan Frakes here is like, as number one, as Riker, is listing off for bravery, for going above and beyond the duty, yada, yada, yada. And finally, you have Worf getting the rank of Lieutenant Commander. Fine.
They make him, like, walk the plank.
And the whole thing is that no one has ever been able to grab the hat off the yardarm. And so Frakes decides to haze him like he's a freshman, and it's really funny. Everyone's having a good laugh.
Hooray for Worf.
Yeah. And Data shows up and goes, why is everyone laughing? Because the Klingon got wet. Because Worf got wet. And they're like, well, because he hasn't bathed in a week and everyone appreciates it. But also, because it's funny, and so he just shoves Frakes. he breaks that woman's arm. Luckily, she lands on Worf so she doesn't drown. But everyone is horrified. Jordy's like, no, Data, that wasn't funny.
And now,
it was.
Did anybody see that SNL show from way back in the day when Patrick Stewart hosted?
I've seen Patrick Stewart. Yeah.
Do you remember the sketch where it was like a... they were reviving another popular TV show from the past, but instead of Star Trek, it was The Love Boat. Do you remember that with Picard as the captain of The Love Boat? I mention it because there was Rob Schneider as a Data character there. And
it was.
Honestly, there's a lot of shtick in here that reminded me of Rob Schneider.
And I will say, I like this movie a lot. But Brent Spiner must be working on his reel because he is just like, he is bebotting and scatting.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the little life forms. And it's just like, dude, this is a movie that's happening and you are applying for Mad TV. This isn't SNL material. Mm-hmm. This is Mad TV material, but he is still going out.
It was really good.
Well, he's
really
gotten good. Emotion shifts, so now he can laugh and hate booze.
Okay, well, first of all, we've got to get here. Captain Picard gets a message, and it is and we find out what it is later. It is the most devastating message you could ever give, because they're playing grab ass. They're having so much fun. I also love this because there's like 20 people on the ship, and half of them are holograms, and so no one is invited. And so when there's a crisis happen, there's a nearby observation satellite that's a telescope, yada yada, and it's being attacked. They've issued an SOS. But, like, people are appearing on the bridge still dressed like they're English officers from the 18th century. And they'll be like, Riker and Picard have had this conversation. Ah, Will, isn't this the way it would be, like, the best way to be at sea? You know, nothing for miles, no communications, no computers, just traveling by gut. And Riker talking with his penis. Terrible food and no women. And then we smash cut to devastating news. It is incredible.
That news being a red alert and they found an abandoned, ruined ship.
And his family is all dead.
Yes.
Picard's family has died in a fire, which we'll get to. It is devastating.
It's not funny.
No, it's not. But him in a silly hat getting bad news is kind of funny.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Computer, door. I can't do a Patrick Stewart as well, because...
Computer, door.
It's going to get worse.
Mr. Data?
It would almost be easier if it was Scotty or Chekhov, because their accents are cartoons.
Say T, Earl Grey hot.
Earl Grey hot.
T, Earl Grey hot.
Yeah, like
although
that.
Although, when I say it, I just imagine a sexy tea bag. Just
like, oh, yeah.
Earl Grey
hot.
That's hot.
So, briefly, this movie is Event Horizon, with them checking out an abandoned ship and Picard having visions.
Yeah, and we find out... that this is where McDowell gets back on the ship. But
yes.
He was conducting some sort of experiment and the Romulans show up.
Right? Yes.
We find a dead Romulan, which looks like a normal pale guy, but with green blood, as one does. And we get reintroduced to Sorin here. Now, they set a lot of this stuff up, right? We already seen Guinan again. I don't know what the advertisements were like. I've seen one of the trailers and it's just Picard and Shatner together, right?
Which is all of what? 10, 20 minutes of this movie.
That's all
Tom.
You really need to know for this movie.
Right. But if you were a TOS fan and you were watching this,
you'd be pissed off.
You'd be very upset because, like, it's the first. This movie is just shy of 2 hours, which, again, action movie, sci fi movie, shy of 2 hours, right where you want to be. But it's the first 10 minutes and then the last 20 minutes, and in between, they play dress up. And so we find the Romulan. They realize some Romulan nonsense could be afoot. And Riker and now Lieutenant Commander Worf are born. They figure it out. And this is where we have Geordi and his series of terrible decisions. His first bad decision is saying, you know what's funny? Shoving people. Data, you shouldn't shove people. And then we're now in, I assume, his cabin, because Geordi is... Well, I guess this is Data's cabin, rather. We have the bad paintings around. We have his
Spot.
Cat, Spot.
Who is clearly Jonesy from Alien and Aliens. It's the same orange tabby.
Pretty much. And
is
but
it
I
the
will
same
say,
cat actor?
It's the same cat actor as the TV show. Because Data really did have a cat, Spot. And I believe it's actually Brett Spiner's cat, which is why they get along so well, even when he's in the terrifying makeup, which would have panicked almost any other cat. But this is when we reestablish the MacGuffin from the TV show, the emotion chip, which you mentioned before. And also, this is Geordi's second bad decision, which is, you know how we're investigating a potential war crime between one of our only enemy races left, the Romulans? We should tamper with that ticker, old buddy, and let's put this unstable chip in your brain. And they do this from time to time in the show, and this has slightly more budget than the show. Not a lot, but a little bit. But they take off the top of his head, and then he has this little glowing yarmulke thing on. And they're like, you know what this needs? Tweezers. And they shove this little glowy bit into his brain hole.
That's exactly what it would look like if you put a chip into an android's head.
It's like upgrading the RAM. You gotta like take a screwdriver, you pop up the old RAM, you stick in a new stick. But this like this new chip is supposed to give him emotions. If you have not watched Picard, the guy shows back up. We then cut to 10 forward, and this is where we start playing around with what the memory chip is, and Guinan has what looks like tie-dyed eggnog. It's like this thick, viscous, cream-colored stuff. And Data hates it. It's funny. It's funny. I don't know. I'm like, did you... anything else? Everyone's just staring at me while I describe this movie.
Tell me more about the drink.
Oh, dude. I hate this.
I hate booze.
I watched it on my phone, so it was really tiny, so I didn't really notice what the drink actually looked like.
This is awful. I hate this. More? Yes, please.
Well, and then we start to see that Data is having issues because he is like starting to laugh uncontrollably.
Yes.
And they go to, it's like while they're investigating, what are they, on that ship?
Yeah. So around here, Picard comes out of his ready room to talk to Dr. Soren. And Soren's like, you don't understand, doctor. I've got to get back to the ship. You see, I've been doing experiments for years now. And
he's like, yeah, you sound like a good guy.
Yeah.
You seem emotionally healthy. And he goes, you see, in the next 72 hours, my experiment will come to completion. And you're just like, all right, Blinky.
Aw.
And the thing is, Picard, who is suffering through trauma and doesn't want to tell people about this, even though... Troy can smell it because she's an empath, and that's all. That's the only role she has in this, is to be vaguely attractive, like, and like smell emotion.
That's her only role in all of the series.
Although at this point she's not showing cleavage anymore, which was a real downer. It's a shame.
Oh, that's a shame.
Although I will say, at one point Soren gets the line like, "You understand, Captain. Time is the fire in which we all burn," and like, which is funny because we don't know yet. But Picard's like, "Ooh, that really touches close to home," and no one knows why. But like, it's just, and then he walks away, he checks his watch. But like you said, what happens next effectively is they're trying to investigate what's happening. Is there actually Romulan involvement? What's going on? And Data and Geordi go down because essentially they're looking for something called trilithium. We discover that there's a potential element which is incredibly destabilizing, which the Romulans are looking for because they've been working on it, but it's gone missing. And because of all of this, they suspect there was something going on with that ship and Soren and whatever. We don't know. Soren shows back up on the ship. And now Data, after making a whole bunch of really shitty jokes with Mr. Tricorder and all that.
Like I said, Rob Schneider shtick.
It is. It's Rob Schneider nonsense. Schneider nonsense.
I bet he had fun with that, though.
He's working on his reel, man. He is going to be on In Living Color, and it's going to be awkward. But he's having fun. I have nothing wrong, like nothing bad to say about Data. It's just very cheesy.
Well, here's the thing about this point. I was like going, okay, Kirk was in this movie. Now we've spent about 45 minutes or so with the TNG cast. Where's Kirk?
He died.
Well, right now it just feels like a TNG episode.
Yeah,
it's like,
it was very much like that.
Which, that's fine, but the expectation was this was some big epic crossover.
Well, hold on to your hat.
Well, but at the same time, I think... friend of the show, Nora, was saying this like when we were talking about the show earlier, but like I'm sure there are people who walked out or people who left pissed
because
I thought this was going to be a TOS movie, and the big three, McCoy, Spock, and Kirk, only
and
one of them's there, and they're well, and we'll get there, but at the beginning, Whoopi Goldberg, when she appears for that first scene she's in where she looks much younger, she has less hair, smaller hat. She was like, well, where's Uhura? You don't understand how long people have been waiting to see Uhura with Guinan, the two black characters in Star Trek together. Yeah. And they didn't think, like, well, we didn't ask her. Well, you guys are stupid.
Oh, could you imagine Uhura, Geordi, and whoever Whoopi is together?
Guinan. Yeah, like, why not? Why not? And... I mean, and it sounds crazy, but McCoy was on TNG at one point, and Scotty was on TNG at one point. Like, they were around, so why not? I mean, Nichelle Nichols was in the previous movie. It was only a few years back. Like, I mean, as of now, she's passed, but in 1994, she was still around. She was still doing stuff. I consider it a lost opportunity. Around here, we get the scene with Troy and Picard, and we find out what happened, which is that there was a fire at Chateau Picard, and René and Robert burned to death in a fire, and you're just like, whoa! First of all, there's still fire. It's the 20th. There's no... Well, and I know, and it, for those of you who have not watched, and I'll tell Daniel to watch this too, there's an episode where Picard becomes a Borg, and it's the season cliffhanger, and at the end of the, at the beginning of the next season, they free him. But the episode after that, we go to Chateau Picard and we meet the family. And it's one of the most emotionally devastating things, because his brother is an asshole. And this whole thing, like, he left home. He was the first one to really leave home. And no one trusts Jean-Luc anymore. Although the sister-in-law is kind of hitting on him the whole episode, which is just whatever. It's fine. But the idea that they die and it's devastating makes this movie have a lot more emotional consequence than any other Star Trek movie, which is really strange.
That's all.
Again, I just don't really know that much about the show, so I can't really say it. Just at this point, the entire time I was wondering, where's Kirk? Where's the original TOS cast? What's going on? Because if you're a fan of this, then, you know, you want to see more of anything.
It did feel like there was a lot in the middle portion of the movie, of them not quite knowing what's going on.
They made the same mistake Bob's Burgers made. They made a movie, but then it wasn't really a movie. It was just an extended episode of the show. And it's like, what's the point?
Well, I mean, I will say too here, like, it's interesting because we have two main heroes, Kirk and Picard, both of which are single men who are in their middle age, and they're thinking about their legacy. That's what it's about, right? Like, and, you know, you have these people doing heroic things, you know, and Kirk, the idea that he ever settles down, like we get Dr. Marcus in number 4, where he's dealing with the crap lousy whales trying to save that universe. But like, the idea that he would ever be anything other than a space explorer never makes sense. Picard occasionally, like, whenever he gets kidnapped or put into a false reality, it's always with this family.
Mm-hmm.
And he's on a ship that actually has kids. We'd call it, I guess, today a generation ship. Like, there's actually children involved. And whenever there's peril, they cut to the families on the Enterprise when he's in charge. And so, like, he's talking about the fact that his family has died, and he was worried that he would have to carry on. He was never worried he'd have to carry on the Picard name because his brother had a son, and now he's the only Picard left. And that's interesting, right? And he goes through his history. He has this like little graphic, it's like a photo book, but things glow, like they're lenticular cards that you collect, like holo Pokemon cards. But he's like, you know, there were Picards who were the first on Mars. There were Picards who won the Nobel Prize, and now I'm the last one left. It's just an interesting idea. We don't talk about mortality because Kirk can never die in that show. And he's going to die here. You kill your heroes in this show, which is interesting. You know, again, like we killed Spock in Wrath of Khan for him to come back in the next one.
Yeah, so that's already out the window.
Right.
Although Kirk's never come back, has he?
No.
Shatner ever made any other Star Trek appearances?
You think he was pissed when they invited Nimoy back for 2009? Can you imagine they invited Shatner to the premiere of 2009, and Nimoy was like, "I have a surprise for you, you fat motherfucker!" Like he's just, and then old man Nimoy shows up. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. Okay. We've been talking for 2.5 hours already.
Oh boy.
So at this point they realize that the trilithium essentially destroys a star. They watch it stop the combustion of the star, right? It stops creating fission, it explodes, it destroys the satellite, and now Sorin is on board and they don't really understand what all's going on. Because a Klingon warbird decloaks and takes Geordi, takes Data, and takes Sorin, right? And this is where we get Geordi being tortured, but we don't actually see it. Apparently, there's two deleted scenes. One scene, they have installed something in its heart where Sorin can stop his heart. which we get reference to when Soren comes back later and he's talking to the Klingon ladies. And the Klingons go, "Did you get anything out of him?" And he goes, "His heart wasn't in it."
Yeah. And then I wondered about that.
Yeah, and then Crusher has a surgery to remove it later. We don't really understand that. But this is where he's tied up like he's back in Roots and Kuta Kinte. Like, they have him shirtless. He has the thing tied around his neck.
It's painful to see.
And the doctor makes a weird remark like, hey, why didn't you ever just have your...
Have your eyes
fixed? And he's like, why? And he's like, so you could be normal. And he's like, what's normal? And he's like, that's what everybody else is, and you're not. Like, what?
That was a quote I put down in my notes.
And Dr. Soren's like, oh, that's a good question. It's what everyone else is, except for you. Yeah. Malcolm McDowell's like, I am a silver fox. Like, it's just, it's such like weird...
quote is, normal is what everyone else is and you are not.
Yeah.
Solid.
I was wondering what I knew him from, and I realized, I know I've talked about Mozart in the Jungle before, but he's actually in Mozart in the Jungle.
He is.
Is this Malcolm McDowell?
No. Yes. Is that his name?
Soren.
Soren. Yeah, him. Yeah.
That's what you recognize?
Yeah.
All right.
He's also the new Dr. Loomis in the...
In the Rob Zombie... He's the best part of those stupid movies.
He's been in everything in the last...
What? He was the main villain in Tank Girl. I mean, we're beating around the bush. Clockwork Orange.
But he has, on IMDb, 290 credits.
Oh, good Lord.
I haven't seen a Clockwork Orange.
It's a movie you have to prepare yourself for and sit down and watch. Like, I think it's a good film. It's not one I revisit a lot because it's very emotionally draining.
It's very violent. This was when he was a lot younger. He's playing like this teenage...
I'm familiar with it. I just haven't seen it.
Well, now I feel like a mansplaining son of a bitch. I'm sorry.
He's also in Caligula, although I think...
he was in Caligula.
He was Caligula. He was the main character.
He's also in a horror movie I kind of like, Cat People.
Yes, he was. He was Natasha Kinski's brother.
He was. I don't know. Like, again, if you've seen anything of note, he's probably been somewhere associated with it.
He was like, in a South Park episode.
He was in the Aladdin TV show. Like, he just... When you have 290 credits and you're in your 70s, you've been a lot of things. He was in Psych. Like, I don't know. He was in Metalocalypse. Like, he
was?
Up, yes. CSI Miami, Kung Fu Panda TV show. He just does the things. Good on him. I mean, I wish I could just say, I'm Malcolm McDowell, and get jobs. He was in the TV movie, The Philadelphia. I could just keep reading stuff.
Yes, Malcolm McDowell has been in other things, is the point we're making here.
Phineas and Ferb.
Right, so what's this whole thing? Picard and trades his spot with Geordi so that he's now Soren's hostage, and Geordi gets put back on the Enterprise so he can be treated?
Well... Around here, we also enter, just before we get there, we get to Guinan's really hip pad. Like, some cool, like, Charles Mingus jazz is playing.
Oh, because they found out that she was on...
She was the only one that's been rescued. But, I mean, that's crucial here for two reasons. First, she explains what the Nexus is. It's like living inside joy. Time doesn't matter. Things fall away. We find out that Soren essentially lost his family, but in the Nexus he can be with the people he loves, right? And it's because this, like, heaven-like state is all these people try to get back to. It's what he wants more than anything. And ships generally are destroyed by this thing.
Mm-hmm.
The fact of the matter is, the Enterprise was one of the first ships to survive it. And even there, anyone who got close... got killed by this thing. Kirk was the one to survive because the ship pulled away at the last minute. That's what we're getting.
I was a little confused, though, then. Why does he need to blow up that star?
Because. So, we're in this giant cartography room. He needs to be on a planet that's hit directly by the ribbon. And right. by blowing up yeah. the stars, yes. it changes the gravity that pulls this thing.
I remember the cartography scene. Yes.
And so when, that's what we're talking
when
about.
When Data had a freak out that he didn't like having emotions, and Picard was like, pull it together, man.
We're all having emotions. And it's funny because Data doesn't emote. That's his thing. He's a robot. He wants to be a human. But it's so clear that he's like, well, I need a new One Piece now because I just shit myself because I got yelled at by Picard. Because Picard turns it off. Patrick Stewart is really good in this movie, and it's kind of fantastic.
He's always good.
Oh, of course he is. Of course he is. He's Patrick Stewart. I haven't listened to it, so, I mean, no one's going to spoil this. This is going to come out after I've listened to it. But I just got the audiobook of his biography.
Oh, cool.
Called Make It So. It just came out.
Make it so, make it so, make it so.
And I was like, I could read this, but then I saw that he reads his own audiobook, and I'm like, ooh, Patrick's gonna read to me. Oh, Picard. And other than Michael Caine, he does my favorite Scrooge too.
Oh yeah, that's right. He was in that. Yes, I remember when he was Scrooge.
Yeah.
he also does a version of Othello where it's an all black cast and he's the white guy.
Ooh, there you go. That's interesting.
It was Shakespeare in the Park.
Does that mean Lawrence Fishburne's Iago?
It may have been. Ooh. It's been a while since I've seen it.
I was just making a joke. If that turns out to be true.
No, it was Shakespeare in the Park. It was in New York. So it's a bunch of New York guys who did it.
I see.
So I thought Fishy was in it, but who knows? It's been a while. Anyway, so the B plot is the Klingon plot. And when they are torturing and kidnapping... McDowell slaps the shit out of the captain and she's bleeding and she goes, this better be the start of a mating ritual. And we've been there. But what they do is they hack his visor. Sorens hacks the visor. And in so doing, in the visor, they have a camera and they find the resonant frequency of the shield so that they can blast through the shield generator, right? That's what's going on.
And here. Picard knows something's up though, because he's hailed them. And they are like picking a fight with him. And he's like, there's something, like, there's a reason why they think they can actually handle us.
With this old school, because they're flying around in a Klingon bird of prey, but it's like one from the original series.
Yeah, it's like an old one.
It's another doffing your cap to the old show.
Yeah.
Right. But also, I love here too, this is something that doesn't matter to the slightest. There's two things to notice if you have not been watching the movie. First, the uniforms are changing slowly throughout the background. They're going from the TNG uniforms to the Voyager uniforms, and it's happening slowly throughout the process in the background. But the thing was, they don't want to upgrade everyone's uniform because obviously this is a one-off movie and who knows if it's going to be successful. So Riker's uniform apparently is like someone else's. I saw that it was Sisko, but I don't think Deep Space Nine is going out at the same time, so I could be wrong about that. But apparently... Geordi is wearing Cole Meany's outfit. And Cole Meany is like this barrel-chested Irish guy. Like, he's the guy who runs the transporters. And so his uniform is so big, it's over his hand. So when you watch him walking around, nothing fits them, which is awesome. It's really awesome. I'm noticing things in movies, which I never do. I'm just like, oh, they're shooting blasters. I'm the not subtle one on the podcast.
Are you watching on a big TV?
Like a person?
Like,
you know, like the TVs we all own? Yeah.
Yeah, I just watch on my phone, usually.
Ooh. You have like two TVs?
I know, but I have like two children that like run around and disturb me.
Okay. So yes, I do watch it on the TV.
I mean, you think I didn't plop my child down? It's like, okay, you're going to sit on my lap. We're gonna experience this together.
You can do that at that age. At my kid's age... it's hit or miss.
Mm.
Some stuff you don't want to show them and some stuff they don't want to see. Like, they're not interested
like
in.
Reading Rainbow Guy, getting blown up by lasers.
Oof.
I don't know. I feel like having seen the movie, I don't think there was anything that would have bothered me.
No, this
would
have been fine.
Yeah.
It's just...
Now, The Wrath of Khan was not okay.
The ear stuff?
Yeah, that was... And there was a lot of cursing in it, too, which I don't... really like for the kids, but
There was a couple. I mean, the only one here which made me laugh was there's only one profanity in this, and it's David going, oh, shit.
Yeah. That was funny.
That was funny. Yeah, so
that was a little funny.
When they discover the frequency of the thing, they're blowing the hell out of the ship. Geordi does like an Indiana Jones and rolls under a falling door and then poses, which is just amazing. But at that point, I will say they do blow up Lursa's ship, and the two Klingon women are villains in TNG. It's a callback for the show if you know the show. If you don't, it's fine.
Right.
But now we're on the planet in the American Southwest.
The Galaxy Quest planet is what I called it.
I feel like this was a nod to the original series, like the classic lizard, you know, battle scene.
Well, classic, like, where are we going to film? We're in Southern California. Yeah. Well, I guess the desert.
This looks alien enough.
Right.
And the whole thing is Soren is going to blow up another star so that the Nexus can hit him. However, it's significant here because though the planet that he's going to be on has no life, the next planet over is also M-class and has like 250 million people on it who are pre-industrial. So now it's not just about stopping Soren because he's an asshole. It's about saving a quarter of a billion lives.
Right.
And what's interesting here, at least for me, as far as plot goes, they fail. Soren wins. He blows up the ship. The core goes critical. And so we have, which again, only if you've seen the show, which I know you have, the first episode is Escape at Farpoint, right? But they separate the ship. So it's funny that the first movie, they separate the ship, which is a cool little practical effect. These are all practical things.
So that's what was going on there. I didn't know that was a callback.
So the top part is the living section, and the bottom part is the engine. And so the top part has what they call impulse slow engines, but if the core goes critical, they can separate it from the nuclear base. And so that's what they're doing. They're separating it from the base, and it crashes in the planet. And I just realized, this is not the planet that Soren's on. So this must be the planet with the people, which means that this is where aliens come from, because this giant flying disc comes over the horizon and crashes. This is their alien moment.
They've what's the prime directive? Violated the prime directive.
Kind of, yeah. And they had first contact, and it was with this giant alien ship. Meanwhile, Soren is now about to blow up the sun. And Picard is, he doesn't like this. He's upset by this project.
Yeah.
And he gets his butt stuck, which is really funny. One way or another, Picard fails. They blow up the sun, and he gets sucked into the Nexus, and all of a sudden, it's Christmas morning.
That was how...
With his fam, yes.
Why I realized we were watching this at Christmas time, because it's a Christmas movie. I didn't know.
Yeah. And
you know what? Those scenes are great. They really are. I mean, part of the thing about Star Trek for me is sometimes these characters just don't seem human. They seem like tropes.
Picard is like, anything with him is just really wonderful.
Especially this scene, because it's like, I can see the man behind the make it so.
Yeah. And he's just like, they're spinning him around because they want to surprise him. And they take the mask off and he's just... His kids are dressed up like they've just come off the set of Oliver. It's amazing. But one of the kids is his nephew, Renee. Mm-hmm. And he just has this moment where, A, his emotions break, of course. But he asks for Earl Grey hot, and he has his wife there. But he's just sipping his port and watching Christmas unfold. And it's just, it's one of those things where we don't really know what Picard truly wants. We get his past, and he was kind of a rapscallion. And whenever he goes on vacation, women just fall all over him, but he mostly wants to be left alone.
Yeah, he wants to like read books and play his flute.
And in a very loose fitting Terry Tell robe. But like,
and Guinan warned him that if he went into the Nexus, that he would never want to leave because nothing else would matter.
Yes. It kind of reminded me of like the Mirror of Eris said, or from Harry Potter. It's like, whatever your biggest desire is, that's what this is.
Well, this came first, so it probably inspired it.
Oh, you think J.K. Rowling was a big Trekkie?
Possibly.
Could be.
I mean, it was on the BBC at the time. I will say, though, it's also very Merlin. It's very like Arthurian legend as well.
Yeah.
But the thing about it is, I will say, him looking at the Christmas tree and those ornaments that kind of glow, I'm like, those are pretty cool. Why don't we have those?
I know. I would like that. I had the same exact thought. Well, it's I want that ornament.
It's about two or three centuries away, or more likely it already exists and has been discontinued. So
yeah, like, oh, that was Miracle on 34th Street.
Right.
Yeah.
I forgot. I was going to talk about the gum guns.
Dude, the gum guns?
I was like, yeah, this is safe. Let me shoot gumballs.
The poor hourly wage workers up there just shooting gum at each other. And then the one kid they give the gun to, pretty great.
Anyway, sorry.
No, you're fine.
So Picard's in the Nexus, and then
Guinan shows up and goes, I'm just the plot. Hey, listen.
What did she call herself? I'm like
a shadow.
A crumb of the person who you know.
Oh,
or
right.
Echo. She
an
says
echo. Right. And she goes... he goes, these are my kids, children. He wouldn't say kids. These are my children. And she goes, yes. And you can go watch them get old. You can see your grandkids.
Mm-hmm.
You can go back in time and watch them be born. And you have, because he's Patrick Stewart and he's an actual actor, this moment where he realizes that on one hand, it's everything he wants, but also none of it's real. And you get that all in his face, mm-hmm. right? And he says something along the lines of, you know, this is wrong. We have to stop Sorin and save those people, because Guinan not misunderstands him. He just realizes that what he says to Kirk later on, being happy doesn't matter unless you're making a difference, essentially.
Mm.
Like, you need to make a difference. So he says, Guinan, you need to help me. And she goes, I can't. I'm just an echo. But there's someone who can help you. Someone from the trailer.
Daniel finally gets his...
I finally get what I was looking for.
His payout.
And I actually wrote this down. 1 hour, 29 minutes, 31 seconds in. That is when Picard and Kirk are finally speaking to each other.
Hey, that's the timestamp. I'm kidding. We're not that far. We're closer than you think, though.
Ooh.
But I will say, though, I love this establishing shot. If you told me this was if you told me this was Shatner's actual home, I'd believe
it. Oh, yeah, so would I.
Because he's just out there, and he's just chopping wood, and he's loving every minute. And his first line is, beautiful day. And he's just like... You're right. It is a beautiful day, and I want to be out there chopping wood.
It's kind of a strange setup. Like, and then they go inside, and like,
and it's this beautiful cabin, modern cabin. And what type of eggs does he make? Those alien eggs that is.
I remember them being huge, but they're not. They're just slightly larger than normal. But it's so like. Because we're talking about the things that we want most, right? This is supposed to be their fantasies.
Eggs.
And Picard, he wants to go to something that doesn't exist, because he's a man who not necessarily lives in the moment, but he's an explorer. He wants to have things that he's never going to get. Shatner's a man with regrets.
He mm-hmm. lives in the
Kirk
past.
Kirk
yeah.
is someone who has regrets. And so,
mostly because he rejoined Starfleet and kept getting pulled back into the Enterprise. And
he's not sure if that was the right thing to do. So this is for him going, I think we are told, 9 years before,
mm-hmm.
where he tells, what was her name? Anastasia?
Antonia.
Antonia, no!
Oh.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Where this is the day when he tells her he's going to go back, but instead he's like, I'm going to marry her.
I'm going to do it right this time, I think are his exact words
gonna
at one point.
Marry that girl.
But it's so funny. He's chopping wood. He doesn't know why. And then he smells the eggs. And then he's like, you there, Captain. He goes, because Picard goes, you know, I'm Captain of the Enterprise. And he goes, Captain, eh? Stir this. He burns himself and he's stirring it. And he goes, we're missing something. And the toast pops. He's like.
Yeah.
Dillweed.
Yeah. But he realizes something's wrong, because the clock that he had given to Bones is back. And like his dog is still alive, which to me always, I get it. The Carlin line, life is nothing but a series of dogs.
Mm-hmm.
But there's just something like, he's like, oh, but you've been dead for 6 years. This isn't the future. This is the past.
Yeah.
And he's just, But then when he's going, like, rather than saying goodbye to Antonia, I'm going to marry her. And he has the ring, and he goes in the bedroom door. And then my favorite part is Picard's like, am I really going to go into the bedroom? I guess I'm going to the bedroom. Smash cut to the stables.
His uncle's farm in Idaho.
Which his uncle is, what, 200 years old? Because Shatner's not exactly a spring chicken either. And this is only 8 years before? Sure, Shatner. Sure.
I only just turned 40.
That's right.
Three.
And he's riding off in the distance. And by the way, this is Shatner. There's no stunt gun on this guy. He's riding off into the... And Picard can ride too.
Well, I'm sure Shatner insisted on it. Let's be real here.
I brought my horse to set. Mm-hmm. He wasn't invited. But
you think the horse's name was like Sulu or something?
Not.
I'm going to ride George today. Come on, George. We're going. Oh, that's funny.
You are going to be under me, just like the real George is.
That's right. You think you could be an admiral? Fuck you, George.
So he breaks Kirk out of the fantasy.
Well, what happens is there's this little gulch that they jump over. And Shatner jumps over it and looks confused and jumps back. And Picard finally shows up. And my favorite is he does this little canter. Like, Shatner knows how to ride horses. And so the horse kind of trots over. And he goes, I've jumped over that thing every day for whatever. And he goes, and every time it scared me. It didn't scare me this time. So you say we're in trouble.
In other words, he knows it's fake.
He knows it's fake, yeah. And he goes, so we're in trouble. Odds are against us. You know, like, it's kind of like,
yeah.
I'm in.
Just the way Sly Stallone likes it.
Right, but I mean, like, Shatner cares so little for things. He's acting, like, fantastic in this. I love this part. And so then we smash cut to literally just 15 minutes earlier in the movie. Because when Picard slips through that little crack in the rocks, Soren's looking down at his watch, effectively, and looks up and there's just a pair of legs there. And the first time it's just Picard, and Picard gets his ass kicked. Mm-hmm. And this time he looks up, and there's a gut in the way, and it's Shatner. And Picard comes behind him, and he goes, who the hell are you? And he goes, that's Captain Picard. Oh, Captain Kirk, don't you read your history? And then they do some Star Trek fighting, which I needed, because you get like the hammer punch, and it's just, oh, it's so good. Anyway, so they divide and conquer. The only thing I want to point out in this fight scene, which I think is adorable, is, you know, Picard's like, you go that way, I'll go this way. I can deal with the computers, you deal with Soren. And he goes, Kirk, be careful. And he goes, call me Jim. And Picard's like, oh, he said, call me Jim. He's so excited. Like, call me John Luke. Like, he's like, oh, like, it just, there's just this moment because both of them are actors. And of course, McDowell is a real actor too, Malcolm. And so, like, and Kirk, you would never put McDowell and Picard or in a Patrick Stewart in the same sentence with William Shatner, but Shatner's having so much fun. You're just like, let the kid act, let him have fun.
You know what he's doing? He's grabbing the scenery, he's putting it between two halves of a ciabatta roll, putting a whole bunch of mustard on it, and just biting into it. And these huge bites. It takes him three to eat the entire sandwich. That's how much he's chewing the scenery here.
Well, that's why they had to film outside. Because there was no scenery left for him.
Yes.
The film shut down for there was no scenery left to chew. But, like, I mean, anyway, so they're fighting it out. It is pretty good. I mean, it's old men fighting. Like, this is not exactly action.
You're a little bit concerned, like, they're going to get injured.
I do also love this beefcake with the afro wig that they do for Shatner when the bridge falls apart.
Oh, I didn't notice.
Because this guy is easily 50 pounds lighter than him, but also like 3 inches taller. So he's like, oh no! And he's holding on to the bridge. And this wig, the wiggiest wig you've ever seen, is just like wisping in the air.
It's not even Shatner's wig. It's an even worse wig somehow.
That's right. But one way or another, Picard essentially hacks the net. The missile doesn't launch. It's locked in the pad. and blows Sword to hell, which is great.
That was good.
Mm-hmm.
And Shatner dies here. And he's bleeding from the mouth.
Never good.
No, it's a classic sign.
Yeah.
It's that, or it's coughing lightly into a handkerchief and there's blood
little
there.
Spots.
Yeah. You know, in this country, if you do that, the paramedics, they just leave you on the sidewalk.
That's right.
They won't even bother treating you. They know you're dead.
They might give you one of those space blankets.
Okay, yeah.
No, you're done.
No.
But essentially, you get this line, did we do it? He goes, yes, we made a difference today. And Shatner's last line is, oh.
What was that line right before then? It was the least I could do for the captain of the Enterprise, which, again, I liked that. It was a nice passing of the torch bit between the two, which was great. It would have been a lot more impactful if this had taken place at the start of the Next Generation's run, but better late than never.
Well, I mean, and I will say there's moments in this where the movie feels kind of saggy. There's a lot that I think really works. I agree. Part of it. Like the idea that Shatner in his retirement, that Kirk in his retirement is one of those people who could just never be happy. Like we've maybe in your own workplace, there's a guy, I'm not going to describe him so people don't know, but he's been there forever. He's been at the school for 40 some odd years. He's done pretty much everything in his field you can imagine. They've been talking about him retiring for 5 years now. I don't know what he does in retirement other than get older and older and pass away. To have someone like this, Kirk, who is the most famous man in the universe, just curl up and retire, he's not going to be on a beach somewhere. He wants to die saving the day, and he does. Meanwhile, Picard, if you're just Picard and you're just like, number one, I gave you the ship for 10 minutes and you destroyed it? It was new!
You said there were alternate endings with the Kirk death. What was going on there?
So apparently the original death was that scene where they're on the bridge, right? And he goes...
The bridge of the ship?
No, the bridge in...
That
with,
bridge.
With Soren. He goes, who the hell are you? And he goes, I'm Captain James T. Kirk. And he goes, you don't matter. And he gets shot almost immediately. And Picard is behind him and kills Soren. And then he's supposed to stop the missile. It was a much shorter scene.
Yeah.
And they're like, you can't kill him right away. We need something. And so we have Kirk throwing in one of those Kirk hammer punches. And then we get a movie. But and this is better than just getting shot. Shot in the back over a matter of $80 or whatever. But... Yeah, it is what it is. This ending still feels like it's not that it's missing something, but just leaving him there under a pile of rocks. I don't know. It's a good ending, and everyone gets their last line where you have Shatner getting his Shakespearean 2.5 minutes of dying. He does not want to die.
Oh, he's got a lot on his mind before he expires.
And just... Oh.
It had a lot to say.
Yeah. And it loses his 22 grams or whatever. but then Picard...
pure poutine gravy is what's the 22 grams leaving William Shatner when he passes away.
They pan to the other planet. They're taken up by Starfleet. And we have the scene that does always get me, which is that... Data is talking to Counselor Troy, and he's like, I felt over 261 unique emotions. And they get a life sign, and it's Spot, and the cat has made it. And Data starts to cry. And Troy, and he goes, I think something's wrong with my emotions, Chip. I'm happy, but I'm crying. And she goes, I think it's working perfectly well.
Yeah, that was...
I think the line is, another family has been reunited.
Mm-hmm.
You turn to dust. If you don't feel that, you're a horrible person. but then Picard is in his ready room, and he is looking for the photo album. And this is where he's talking to Riker, and he goes, so did you really meet Kirk just to kill him? Sure did. Kirk is super dead on that planet. No, we don't need to worry about burying him. He's being picked apart by birds right now. But then they're like, a man told me that time is our enemy, something we should fight. And he goes, no, I think of time as a companion. And it doesn't matter how you, what you leave behind, it matters how you live. And then he finds the photo album and it's two to beam up. And then we go to our next adventure. And again, I think part of the reason this movie was not well liked by the fans was, if you're a TOS fan, they're barely in it. And if you're a TNG fan, you're probably on the younger end of life because the show just went off the air. And you're not, you don't want a movie to be telling you about mortality and what your legacy is going to be. Which is a shame, because I think as far as Star Trek goes and the morality of the distance, this does an interesting job of saying,
it's good.
You could be stuck in, you know, it's kind of like the end of The Good Place. You could get stuck in a place where you're having pleasure all the time, but does that mean you've lived? It doesn't mean anything. There's no weight to that world. So what you should do is try to make a an impact. And Picard saves whatever it is, 200 million fake lives of people we don't see. But he says, look, I'm willing to die for those people. That's that kind of Spockian utilitarianism.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. It means that Spock made an impact on Kirk, who's willing to die for people he'll never know, right? That's good. So, final thoughts on, I think, the last movie of my month. I should pull this up while I'm talking. Give us your, Kieka, what's your final thoughts on this?
It was great. I loved it. It made me want to start watching Star Trek again.
Excellent.
Like I said at the top, I'm not a Trekkie. That doesn't mean I like want to boo Trekkies and say they have bad tastes.
But I'm gonna
you
say.
Never know.
That's not what you're saying.
No, so, no, yeah. It legitimately isn't. I mean, I'm legitimately shocked that Gene Roddenberry never got like a Kennedy Center honors or something. He deserves it for the way he impacted pop culture. It's just not something that necessarily is for me, and this movie really didn't change my mind. I liked the beginning. I liked the scenes with Kirk and Picard. Everything else just kind of felt like an extended TNG episode, which that just doesn't really work as a movie for me. So, yeah, I mean, if you're a big Star Trek fan, there's definitely some value here at the very least to see Kirk's death, and I understand completely why Kieko and Nick like it better than I do, but it didn't convert me.
Well, I mean, my final thoughts are, I think it's really good. Frankly, as far as Star Trek movies go, if you talk to your average fan, this is one they don't talk about. I don't think they care for it much. I think this is an underrated one in my mind. You know, like, you're generally either a new movie fan, a TNG fan, or a TOS fan. And so this one kind of straddles two genres. People don't care. And like I said, I think, as opposed to, say, Wrath of Khan, which has mortality on the line, it's an action movie. Like, number four is a comedy. Even number three is kind of heavy sci-fi, Dune-ish-like. But it doesn't have, like, stakes like this. I think this one's underwatched and underrated. I like this movie. I do. However, next week, we're going completely in another direction. One of my favorite movies, I think one of the greatest films ever made. And we're talking Jaws, 1977. Almost from the beginning of the Star Trek universe. But my month is nearly done. So thanks for sticking with us through Back to the Future, Terminator, and Star Trek so far. And thanks for doing all you do to keep us on the charts. Thanks for reviewing us and sharing us. And we appreciate everything you do for us as our fans. Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Myopia Movies is a podcast production of Dude Letter Podcasting and is produced by Nick Hoffman. It is edited by Nur Trinette and Daniel Suttis and is hosted by Nick Hoffman with production assistance by Matthew Quinn, Daniel Suttis, and Nur Trinette. The theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod from incomptech.com. Licensed under the Creative Commons by Attribution 4 license, Creative Commons/licenses by /4.0. Thanks.